jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 21 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm in a fantastic spirits after a massive weekend of scoring this weekend for me. And I'm joined by two guests, our regular Dunny. Welcome back to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me, Marcus.
And Bryce for, I think, now his third show. Welcome back, Bryce.
Yes, thanks for having me back on. It's good to be back on with Dunny and yourself, particularly after Showdown.
You'd be very pleased. It's good timing for yourself. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I am absolutely psyched. I scored 27.91. For anyone keeping track, I have a leapfrogged Donk who scored only 23.30. So I was 150 behind him, and I'm now over 300 points ahead. And boy, does it feel good. I'm hoping you, both of you, had equally good rounds so that you're as buoyant as I am for this week's podcast.
I'm surprised it took you that long to mention your score, mate. I thought it might have just been the first thing you said. Yeah, the first thing you said.
I had a pretty good week as well. I scored 26.86. Managed to improve my buddy Gray Walters' scores from last week. So I had Buddy's big score, Grundy's big score, and a host of others. And went up 896 places to just outside 2,000. Also won 8 of my finals and into 5 prelims.
Well, see, I thought I had a really good score this week until I looked at what everyone else had. You know, a 24.50 normally would, you'd be pretty happy with that. But I actually dropped about 1,000 places this week with a 24.50. I don't know how that happened. But yeah, so you're right. It was a really high scoring week. Some great performances. But I had a few of them. I had Cornelio with his 157, Oliver's 147. I took Tommy Mitchell's 153 as my vice captain score. But there was a few letdowns for me. I actually had to play Joel Smith on field, so got his 65. I did something that I couldn't believe I was doing, but I had no cash and had to bring in a defender, so I brought in Heath Shaw. I was thinking of you when I did it, Marcus, with his 76 this week. But I guess in his defense, the ball really didn't go down his end most of the day. So not his fault, that one.
Heath Shaw definitely didn't contribute to my high ranking for the week. Midfield, though, this week, just huge scores. Some of you boys had called it out already, some of the massive scores there. My lowest for the week was Dusty with his 111 and probably a couple that you blokes might not have had. Kelly, 205. Wow, that was huge. And Joel Selwood with 159 and Franklin with a 178, really sort of paying me back after just both having really poor weeks last week. So I think over the course of two rounds, they're still not an amazing average, but they clawed a bit back of what they lost up last week. So I'm into the top 2,800 at the moment. And I think Mark's crashed out of the 5,000. So he had a particularly poor week. So I'll try not to revel too much in his sorrow. For this week's show, gents, we're going to spend a bit of time talking about who to trade Gaff to for anybody who still has Andrew Gaff, and go over potentially a couple of PODs and debut the overrated and underrated section for yourself, Bryce. Hopefully you have a bit of fun with that. So before we jump into that, just a quick update on our Supercoach Coach Leagues. We are now only 180 points off the number one 18-man league. We caught up 300 points across the weekend. So with three rounds to go, definitely in it with a very good shot to win it. I think probably been the form leagues over the past 6, 7, or 8 weeks. So looking forward to continuing to contest that. And in the overall ranking stakes, the current leader of our Supercoach Coach group is Mark's Tankosaurus. And if anybody's been tracking how the overall league rankings have been going, Mark's actually moved up into second after a massive score of 27.26. That was the highest score of the top nine, and that pushed him up 4 spots into second. So Mark, he is now only 21 points away from the number one team, and very, very much in Mark's corner, and hoping he can take it away in the next 3 weeks. Good luck, mate. All right, let's jump into the questions now, lads. The first one here is from Jeff Lane, one of our patrons. He's asking about who to trade Gaff to, and he suggested here whether or not Jack McRae is still a reasonable option or whether or not he'd be considered risky, having previously just done his hamstring. Gents, do either of you have Gaff in your team at all?
No, I don't have him, mate. Luckily now, I never made his way in.
Yeah, certainly lucky. How about yourself, Bryce?
No, I don't have Gaff either. I think when I had a choice to bring him in, I brought Lachie Neal in instead.
Thoughts on McRae as a replacement in?
McRae actually came into my side a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't stand having a Rocky on my field any longer, so upgraded with the amount of cash I had in my bank from Rocky to McRae. And since I've done that, I think Rocky's gone 50s and 60s the last couple of weeks, and McRae's gone 147 and 121. So he's still scoring well. The Bulldogs, I think, had a win on the weekend, and he scored that 121. When he scored that 147, I'm not actually sure how the Bulldogs went. But one thing I've had a look at is how McRae scores depending on the opposition he's playing against. So against the top five, he's averaging 114. Against the middle seven on the ladder, he's averaging 132. And against bottom six, he's averaging 141. So scores are right up there and don't seem to be too affected by who he's playing against, unless he's playing against a top five team. He's got North Melbourne, Carlton and Richmond. So Richmond, he might struggle a bit, but if he scores a 115, you probably take that. And then the other two games, North Melbourne and Carlton, he's hopefully going to score well as well. So I actually like him as an option to replace Gaff this week at 551. So it's a little bit up from Gaff's price. So if you've got money in the bank, I reckon he's one of the top six options you want to bring into your side, along with Mitchell, Cripps, Dangerfield, Josh Kelly and Oliver. I have him in that top six midfielders, a must-have. I guess there's the injury risk that we need to consider, but maybe you gents have some thoughts on that. What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, look, I really like him as a trade-in. If I had Gaff and I had the cash, I'd certainly be making that move. And it seems like we're not the only ones. As we record this, it's the most popular trade of the week so far, McRae in for Gaff. There's 5.7% of all trades have been that one. But you will need a bit of cash to make that jump. You know, Gaff sitting at 517,700. And to get up to McRae, you will need 551,400. So if you've got a little bit of cash there, you can certainly make that leap. I'm not too concerned about his injury. He seems to be, with a 131, 74, 147, 121, it doesn't seem to be holding him back at all. Marcus, your thoughts?
A lot of the other players that, Bryce, you mentioned in that top six bracket actually cost a little bit more, probably, 590 plus. So Clayton, Kelly, Danger, Mitchell, Cripps, they're all minimum 590K. So certainly in terms of a top scoring option, his price looks attractive. And Carlton has got to be an attractive opposition that's coming up as well. Interesting to get your thoughts on Richmond players, considering the run that they have left with the last three games. They play Gold Coast this week, Essendon the week after, and then Bulldogs for their final round. If you didn't have Dusty or you traded him out, would you consider him potentially as a top scoring replacement?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that one. He's had a 139 a couple of weeks ago. Other than that, a 110 and a 111, and they're his only scores over 100 since since round 10. So he's just not putting in those massive scores that we're used to seeing from him. Having said that, his last 4 weeks is where he scored all three of those 100-plus scores. I'd be a bit nervous about Dusty. He seems to be, not pulling out those massive scores we saw last year, but, he's cheaper than Gaff, so that might be something you could look at if you are struggling for dollars.
Yeah. I know we did get a question about Joel Selwood as well. Chris Slater from Facebook actually asked about him. He's got three trades left and 60K to play with. And the upside to trading to Selwood is at 460K, you actually get some cash out of that. You can potentially turn Goldie into Grundy with that sort of cash. So that's something to keep in mind. Joel Selwood's been a little bit up and down, but with a 159 against the reigning premiers last week and the last two rounds being against Fremantle and Gold Coast, would either of you consider him as a bit of a smoky, or is his roller coaster nature a little bit too risky? What do you think about that, Bryce?
He's at a pretty good price point at 466K. I don't know whether it's just my perception of Selwood, but he seems to step up in the big games, and that's where he gets all his big scores. So last week he had the 159 in a really close game, and he really stepped up to try and win that for the Cats. Against a team like Fremantle and Gold Coast, if it's not a close game, I don't know what that means. He's actually going to score well. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. In his last five games, he's had scores of 71 and 52 and also an 80. It's a bit of a risk. There's only three games left, so it could turn out. He's such a cheap price and a proven primo. He's definitely worth a gamble because Grundy's in great form. So if it meant you could go that, I'd probably support that type of move. You've also got Rory Sloan, who's sitting at 464. He's slowly building since coming back from injury. Crows are in a position where they need to win. So you could see him having some real impact in the next couple of games if they keep winning against GWS and North Melbourne. So I don't mind him as an alternate to Selwood. And I think he's a bit of a pot as well.
Just keep in mind, they do have GWS this week, and their midfield actually gives away the least amount of points to opposition midfields across the year so far, but certainly the round 23 game against Carlton should go a way to negate that. You'd think you'd have a pretty big grand final round, so also particularly attractive for anyone who is playing for league stakes. Carlton, certainly the opposition you'd prefer to have at this stage. Any thoughts on potentially going with Scotty Pendlebury? He's got Brisbane this week, Port Adelaide next week, and then finishes with Frio. So again, you know, with three rounds to go, you can start taking, you know, a bit more of an outside risk and look a little bit closer at strength of schedule.
Yeah, look, I like that run home, Marcus. I think it should be good. You know, he's sitting at 538, so he's, you know, not too much more than what Gaff is. I think, yeah, that run home for Collingwood is a really good one. He's sitting in 8.9% of teams. So, you know, he's not overly common. So you could pick him up and he could get you that win in a final that you need, being a bit of a point of difference.
We did get a generic question from Chris Todd on Facebook asking for, you know, PODs for Gaff. So outside of the blokes that we've mentioned, is there anybody sneaky that you've been considering for your own league finals or anything similar?
One that sticks out to me, who's averaging around 107 for the season, last five games also gone at 107, is someone from Geelong, is Mitch Duncan. The Cats actually have a reasonable run home as well. They got Hawthorn at the G, Frio and Gold Coast at Clitheroe Stadium. I think he's one that goes under the radar a little bit, and his scoring has been pretty consistent the whole year. He's priced at 5.4, so only 6K up from Gaff. So I think that he's a really good option that not many would have, and his scoring is fairly reliable, and that's probably one that I'd go for. The other one I like is Matty Crouch. He's also been building since his injury. Last five games gone 101, 85, 112, 127. He's priced at 5.18, so you don't have any cash in the kitty. You can pretty much do a sideways from Gaff to Crouch, and I think he's a pretty good option as well. How about you, Danny?
Had my eye on a couple of those that you mentioned. I really like Matt Crouch as well. You know, priced exactly the same as Gaff, so it's the definition of a straight swap. And he's only in 6.5% of teams, so he's really one to look at. You mentioned Pendles and that good run home for Collingwood. If you want an absolute point of difference, a guy who's only in 0.9% of teams is Taylor Adams. He's averaging 113 over the last three and 105.8 over the last five. Not massive numbers, but you know, with that run, could do really well. Had 107 on the weekend against Brisbane. So if you do need an absolute point of difference, he could be the guy you'd look at. I like Mitch Duncan as well, as Bryce talked about. The other one who's having a really good run at the moment would be Dane Beams in mind there. And it was, his five-round average is 113, but he didn't have a huge score on the weekend, unfortunately.
I like the suggestions you gents have gone with there. Now, a follow-up question, if you were to downgrade Gaff and be able to, as Chris had mentioned in his earlier question, to upgrade another player to actually use up that cash, how many trades would you need to actually consider something like that? So Chris has three trades left. That would put him down to only one trade to go. Of course, after this week, there are only two rounds left. So it's essentially one trade with two rounds to go. Is that going too skinny, or at this stage, are you okay to burn down to one trade left?
I guess the reason we don't want to go down to zero trades is to avoid the multi-week donuts, and I think that's something that Mark mentioned a few weeks ago on the podcast. With 2 weeks to go after this week, going down to one trade is probably the line there. Two would be comfortable. One is a little bit less comfortable and probably depends on the bench cover you've got and the risk profile of your team. If you're just wanting to go all out for that final surge in overall rankings, I like it as a move to go down to one trade. If you're a little bit more focused on leagues, I'm probably less inclined to go down to the one trade because that'll potentially burn you for the grand final. But yeah, it's really team dependent and depends on your bench cover and also the risk profile of the players that you have on the field. How about you, Dunny?
I think that's right. You've got to look at the risk profile of your guys that you've got. You've got to make sure that, you know, depending on what your focus is, are you going for that rank where, you know, you need to trade, or are you going for those league wins? So yeah, I think exactly as you were saying there, Bryce, that's the sort of the number that I'd be looking at.
Before we get on to more questions, just going to run through a few rookies just in case anybody is still on the off chance looking at downgrading to free up some cash. I won't go too far in depth with these because they're probably not playing on field. If you're making a trade to a rookie to play on field, you're probably best off just side swapping a premium in their stead and not putting these rookies on field. So you're really just looking at them as a downgrade option. And in a worst case scenario, in the next 2 weeks, you're faced with a lot of donuts. They might come on. So we've got four rookies actually on the bubble. Fergus Green, a forward from the Bulldogs, he scored 41 and 56 at 124,000. You've got Liam Baker for Richmond, 45 and 32 in his first two. The benefit of him is he's basement priced. So you save an extra 20K by going with Liam Baker. He's only priced at the 100K instead of the 120. For anyone looking for DPP players to pivot with, there are two on the bubble. One plays for Ports, Kane Farrell. 117,300 is his price point as a defensive midfield MPP player. And then you've got Jordan Dawson as a mid forward playing for Sydney, 70 and 53, his first two games at 120,000. There are two more basement priced rookies that made their debut, or one came back from a very long term injury. Alex Johnson, everyone's happy to see him back and playing for Sydney. He's available in the back line at 102,000, scored 65. And Jack Madgen for Collingwood, available at the same price point in the midfield. So on the off chance you're looking for a downgrade and you still somewhat concerned about cover, those are six players that played on the weekend who might be suitable downgrade targets depending on what you're looking for. Won't spend much longer on that because probably not relevant for most. So I'll go to the next question here. This one's from Will Flenley on Facebook. He's got two trades left and he's got Gaff and Green. Now, talk is Green's likely to miss some games with soft tissue injury. With two trades left facing two injuries, do you hold one of them? Do you only trade if you're facing a donut, or do you just bite the bullet, trade them both and go down to zero trades with two rounds to go?
I guess firstly, Gaff is pretty much a must trade there. You've got a lot of cash there to actually upgrade him to someone fairly decent. So that's down to one trade. So then it's a consideration about Green, whether you want to trade him or not. It depends on how many weeks he's out for. If he might come back for the final game, you might be inclined to hold him if you've got bench cover. If you're facing a donut, I think that you're probably forced to trade him. I think they're the main considerations for me. It sucks going down to zero trades, but if you're facing a donut and you're playing for overall, you pretty much have to replace the guy and hope for the best on the remaining couple of weeks. What about you, Dunny?
100% agree, mate. I think, you know, obviously Gaff is a must trade. With Green, I'd hold out until the last minute, you know, later in the week when we know exactly how long he's going to be out for. If it's going to be, what have we got, three games left, if it's going to be two, I think I'd probably still trade. Yeah, you're right. It sucks going down to zero trades. It does take a lot of stress out of your week, though. You don't have to worry about who you're trading in and out. But the other thing you have to consider, obviously, is just the strength of your bench cover. you know, if you've got someone like, apart from this week, he wasn't very good, Paul Ahern sitting on your bench, you might consider just playing him instead. But, you know, if you haven't got much on the bench that's going to score you, you know, anything over about a 60, then, yeah, I think you do have to trade there.
And I think another point for me is Green's actually priced pretty low. So if you trade Gaff for someone about the same price and you don't have much money in the bank already, that doesn't allow you much flexibility to get Green up to someone decent. So one of your moves might be to actually go from Gaff down to someone at about the high 400s or one of the Joel Selwoods, and that will allow you to actually get Green. If he's out for long term, you've decided you need to trade him, that means you can actually get him up to one of the decent forwards, like a Wingard or one of the other gun forwards, which seem to be really hard to pick at the moment. But rather than get a speculative guy in for Green who's only priced at 367, I'd probably maybe try and combine the two and try and get two decent players in rather than a really good player and a really weak player. But you just have to play up the projected scoring of both those players and work out what the best option is for your team in overall points.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. That's the really important thing is there. You don't want to trade to someone just for the sake of trading him if it's going to be to someone in that 300 and, you know, that mid to high 300,000 range where you're just not going to get much in the way of scoring. That's most of the reason why I didn't trade in my back line and I actually rolled with Joel Smith on the field this week because I'm one of these silly owners who still has Hibbard and there's just nothing to go to at his price point if you don't have any cash in the bank. So, you know, there was just no point trading for the sake of it in that case. So similar case with Green. If you're not going to get anything for the trade, just hold him and play your bench cover.
Probably makes sense, as you mentioned right at the top there, to commit to the trade that you have to and probably save the last one for a donut. If you're just upgrading Green from a rookie, you probably still hang on the extra week just to wait and see in case of absolute carnage in the last two rounds. Now, next question here is from Jason Roz, one of our Patreons. He traded Fritch out to Delidio on the weekend, which is really unfortunate, and it appears Delidio now is going to be back out of the side. At 455,000 to play with, Jason should at least be able to get a decent enough replacement in, and he's got three trades left as well, so he should definitely be pulling that trade trigger. The forwards have fluctuated so much in price, with inconsistency being a big issue. I think in my forward line, as it currently stands, I don't actually have a single player above 450,000, except McDonald, but he's technically in my back line. So for 455, you can get most forward line premiums. Considering that, gents, who would you pick up for a Delidio replacement this week?
If you don't have Devin Smith, but I think just about everyone's got Devin Smith, he'd be the first one that I'd look to. The other guys, I think, as we've sort of talked about already, I think Bryce, you mentioned him earlier, you know, you've got Chad Wingard, who is one of the forwards who's actually doing some decent scoring at the moment. When I think about it, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Mark, because all the forwards have been really up and down this year, and they're just not delivering on a regular basis. You throw in a Justin Westhoff, he's been scoring reasonably well, yet he was down with 73 this week. Heaney's been up and down. Probably one that might be worth looking at. He's had a reasonable run lately, averaging 119 in the last three. Was Sam Menegola. Scored 144 on the weekend in a, you know, tight game against the Tigers. What do you think of him as a Cats fan there, Marcus?
Yeah, I actually had him for the overrated, underrated section because I think sneakily he seems like one that's flown under the radar there. With Frio and Gold Coast coming up, I definitely like that as a POD. The other one that I've talked up for a few weeks now, who's still managing his consistency, although, you know, at the start of the season that certainly was his big problem, is Chad Wingard. Chad has been the picture of consistency over the last few rounds, and even Robbie Gray has struggled to match his output. So if you have the cash for him, he's above the 450K mark, but he's certainly one that is worth considering there.
Yeah, I've got a couple of options here, Marcus. So Tom McDonald, as you mentioned before, he's actually under the 455. He's priced at 451. So I remember him being up towards the high 500s at some point. But, yeah, he's a pretty good pick, although Melbourne have a pretty tough run on the run home. But in his last five games, hasn't gone below 74. so isn't a bad option. One player that's a bit of a pod that's actually been flying under the radar and been a little bit up and down, but he has a pretty good run on the way home. He's got Gold Coast, Essendon and Western Bulldogs, so a pretty good run. He's from Richmond by the name of Shane Edwards. He's priced at 439, so a bit of a unique, but he could score pretty well in the last three games. So if you want to go kind of left field, then he's one that you could consider. But I'm looking down the list under 455, and you've got Robbie Gray, who's been up and down, but he's a star, genuine star. And then Buddy, coming off a 178, he's priced down at 424. So he's one you probably don't want to be up against in a league final, but can probably win or lose you a game as well. So he's certainly worth the punt if you don't have him.
All right, gents, let's go to the overrated, underrated section. And the first bloke off the run sheet is one suggested by yourself, Bryce. Joel Selwood after his 159, overrated, underrated?
Joel Selwood, I think, is probably appropriately rated, I think is the terminology we use. He's coming off a big score, but he's had a roller coaster season. So I don't think that he's underrated or overrated. I think he's about right.
Yeah, I agree with that, mate. I think if you're rating him just off of this week's big score, he'd be overrated. But if you take his last half a dozen games into account, he's probably appropriately rated. He can pull out those massive scores, but as you mentioned earlier, he can tend to go missing a bit in terms of scoring when they play the easy teams. He does just seem to lift for the big games. So I think he's appropriately rated.
How about Josh Kelly after 205? Does that make him underrated?
Definitely overrated.
Oh, wow.
So hear me out. So he's had an interesting season. So played a few games early, got injured, came back, and he's played three top five teams for an average of 90. He's played five middle seven teams for an average of 105, and he's played five bottom six teams for an average of 149. So his really big scores have come against really average opponents. And interesting enough, in the next three games, he's got two middle seven teams and a top five team where he's averaging 90 and 105. So I don't know whether that projected score will continue. He's an absolute jet of a player, but yeah, I'm just not sure I would be selecting him over some of the other top six scorers and expecting him to trade him this weekend for him to continue the 150s and the 200 scorings. Yeah, certainly think he's a little bit overrated.
Yeah, if you're looking at that 205 that he had this week in isolation, I'd probably say overrated. As a non-super coach player, as a footballer, I think he's definitely appropriately rated. He's an outstanding player in the competition and will be a great player for years to come. But I think Bryce's point there is probably spot on. There's better value, potentially a little bit cheaper, who's going to get you those good scores in the last three games. If we were making this call early in the season, I'd say pick him up without hesitation. But as we've talked about, there's only three games left and you've got to look at who they're playing and what they're likely to do in those games. So I'd say appropriate to, if maybe a touch overrated in terms of that score this week.
How about Sam Menegola, gents? We touched on him briefly. 486,000. He started the season with 74 and 57. And I think on the podcast, we actually recommended some people jump off at that stage. But he's since continued to fight back, and he's averaging 98 for the season right now.
He was on a lot of lists early on in the season, and a lot of people picked him up early, expecting him to have a big year. He didn't start out that well. He's coming home with a wet sail. I think he's probably a little bit underrated so far.
Ooh, good one. I think he's probably a little bit underrated. I think he's had a reasonable season as a forward, tends to pop up every now and then. He's probably worth a gamble on the run home, but no one really has talked about him. I mean, he was one of the highest priced forwards to start the season. No one really picked him up, and yeah, no one's really spoken about him since. So, yeah, I think he's underrated at the moment.
All right, the last one of the players that I've got for this section is Josh Dunkley. He's averaging 89 for the season. His last three scores read 105, 147, and 132. Potentially a bit of a pod if you have some cash to splash for the last three rounds. Overrated or underrated? Dunny, what do you reckon?
Look, I'd say he's a bit underrated based on the scoring that he's been given. But if you talk to my good mate Roy over at the Traders, Roy's all over him like a rash and is probably overrating him to the hilt. But if you ever listen to their podcast, Roy's a massive fan. But look, I think he's really slipped under the radar, I think, of a lot of coaches this year. You mentioned his season average is only sitting at 89, but you know, when you get to this pointy end of the season, you've just got to look at what their recent form is and what they're going to do in the next 3 weeks. So I'd say he's very much an underrated player at the moment.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. Based on previous scoring, definitely underrated at this point. Bit expensive, 502, but that's not what this segment is all about. It's all about being overrated or underrated, and certainly think that he's flown under the radar in some super coach circles. And yeah, I'd classify him as underrated as well.
All right, gents, let's finish up with a captain's corner. After some massive scores last weekend, certainly looking to repeat that in round 21. Some tempting options early on in the round, especially with Richmond playing Gold Coast. Be tempting to put the VC on old Dusty there. Bryce, any thoughts about who you might go with for the next round?
Well, I guess you probably have to start with the first game on Saturday, or one of the first games on Saturday, with the Hawks and the Cats. So a couple of big players there. Unfortunately, you can't run a VC into C with these two players, Dangerfield and Tom Mitchell. So it's probably one of those as a vice captain option from my point of view. The Cats generally, I think, run head-to-head midfields and don't really run tags. No one seems to tag Mitchell all season, and that's why he's averaging so highly. So I think that I like him as a vice captain. I don't really like Josh Kelly against the Crows. I think he's probably a bit overrated there. You've got McRae against North on Sundays. That could be a good backup option. Gorn against the Swans, based on what Grundy scored against Sinclair last round, that's probably my preferred backup captain option. You've also got Cripps against the Dockers over at Optus Stadium. So a big range of player, probably named all of the midfield and ruck options that are right up the top. But there's plenty of options. But for me, probably Tom Mitchell into Gorn.
Yeah, I reckon I like some of those options there, mate. I think Tom Mitchell will probably wear the VC for me, and more than likely it will head into Grundy against the Lions on Saturday night. But if you wanted a bit of a different or maybe even a bit risk-reward sort of vice-captain, you could potentially look at Devon Smith on the Friday night against St Kilda. He loves the tackle, loves getting the footy, and seems to really enjoy playing at Etihad as well. So he could be one that you could consider there. Marcus, where are you heading, mate?
I just cannot go past Tom Mitchell as vice-captain. Five of his last six scores have been 150-plus. Surely that's unprecedented. I think Gary Ablett, even when he was doing crazy things, I don't know if he had quite a six-round patch as Mitchell's had. 181, 159, 192, 150, and 153. Just insane. So you got to stick the vice-captaincy on Mitchell. And then I think Grundy's actually been slightly hotter form than Gorn. So I'd take him against Steph, even though Gorn's playing Sinclair, who might be considered a slightly easier opponent to navigate. So, I like the suggestions that you guys chucked out, but definitely don't go past Mitchell as the VC would be my only 2 cents there. All right. Thanks very much for this week's show, gents. And do you have anything to leave our listeners with heading into round 21?
Just a short one, a lesson from last year. I was at this point in leagues having won my first game in the finals, a 1v4, I was heading through to a prelim, but saw a player that I wanted to pick up that was going to go up in price. This round I wanted to get him before I couldn't afford him the following week. That player was Lachie Neal, who happened to get injured in the next game, and then I needed to trade him straight back out of my side. So if you're playing leagues and you're tempted by a player that might go up in price and out of your reach, just have a little bit of a think about it and what might happen if that player gets injured, because I've certainly been burnt the hard way. So what are your final thoughts, Danny?
Look, I really like that one, mate. I think that's a very important thing. If you've got the week off, you might be able to hold fire with those trades. But I was actually going to head the opposite direction, and that is if you're playing this week, that means every final from here on in's a knockout. And if you are desperate to win your league, particularly if there might be a dollar or two on the end of it, don't leave anything on the table. Go for it. What have you got to lose? If you're going to lose the game anyway, you might as well give it a shot.
Thank you both, gents, for your contributions again this week and throughout the season. And with that, we'll sign off for another week. And there's only two more rounds up to go after this, so not long to go. We'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See everyone.
See everyone.